Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to the program. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Magnus Thiebold. We have a good show for you today. We have, as we start every week, we have What's Up in Burnaby. I'll be speaking to Srishti Gangdev of the Burnaby Beacon about some of the big stories this week. And it's an all-SFU edition because that's where the big stories are this week. So we'll be talking a bit about the sudden and unexpected cancellation of the SFU football program after almost 60 years in operation. We'll also be talking about Mary Ellen Turpel Lafond, who's going to be, is giving back her honorary degree from SFU under some considerable pressure, and how even that is not really satisfying some of the critics of her and the university. Later in the show, SFU is facing some labor turmoil with its teaching support staff union, and we'll be talking to TSSU Chief Steward Felix Ruiz de la Orden about what's happening there. And a little later in the show, looking at Lyme, we'll bring our regular presentation about the many developments in treating and dealing with Lyme disease, which also touch on a lot of brain science and healing for brain injuries. Very interesting stuff. All that and more coming up here on Speak Up. All right, let's talk about what's up in Burnaby. Joining me today is Srishti Gangdev, reporter with the Burnaby Beacon. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
An all SFU edition today. So let's start with the sudden and surprising news that SFU is closing down its football program that was announced on Tuesday. Football program has been a high-profile part of SFU's sports since the university's founding in 1965. The news seemed to come out of the blue. What happened?
Yeah, really shocking news, I think, for everyone in the SFU community and anyone who's really interested in local sports, I would say. Like you said, this is a pretty integral part of SFU history. The team has been around for a long, long time and has produced, I'm not a football fan, but I know that it's produced some of, you know, the CFL's greatest players. Mm-hmm. So to hear on last Tuesday that the university was just shutting down the program was a really big shock for a lot of people.
Yeah, really out of the blue. There hasn't been any discussion in the public or with the campus or anywhere. Is this one day, boom, gone?
Exactly. And I think actually, last Tuesday was the first that, you know, members of the coaching community at SFU had also heard about it. I had talked to a former coach who had been with SFU up until about 2021. And he said that, you know, there were murmurs in a group chat that he had just the morning of, and that was the first anyone, you know, even within the coaches knew about it. The players found out just a couple hours after that, and then the university went public with it. So he said that they were really just, this was a sudden shock for them. And you know, you have to think about the players. A lot of them are from out of town. They're on scholarships. They came here specifically to play football, and they don't really know, you know, what the future holds for them now.
Yeah, I mean, students have committed to come to this school, to this program, and now they're without a team.
Exactly, yeah.
And we know at the university level, it's not that easy to just switch teams. I would presume that in this situation, they would be able to move on to other teams without the usual one-year layoff. But I can only imagine that those players are, at this moment, gobsmacked at how their whole reason for being here has just been yanked out from underneath them.
And, you know, I can't speak to whether they would be able to skirt some of the usual, I guess, rules and regulations around joining teams. But, you know, the former coach that I talked to did mention a lot of the university teams in North America have already set up their rosters for the next year. You know, spring camp at SFU actually happened a few weeks ago. So these teams are already, you know, set up for the next year, and it's not going to be easy for other schools to open up new spots, or maybe, you know, they can't get rid of their players that they've already signed to make room for SFU players. So it is really going to put these players in a limbo as to at least what the next year is going to be like, and going forward, what their careers will look like.
So what are the reasons that SFU has provided for this sudden decision?
Yeah, so they're saying that it's they just don't have anywhere to play. So there's been, you know, quite a few football programs across North America that have shut down. This is what the university is saying. They didn't really have a conference to play in until they joined the Lone Star Conference in 2021. And then earlier this year, the Lone Star Conference declined to invite them back. That's not to say that there aren't other places where potentially they could have gone. I'm not privy to why they decided not to go down some of those routes. Like, there's Canadian divisions, and I think U Sports is a large Canadian organization, but it seems like they haven't gone down any of those routes, and they just said they didn't have anywhere to play.
Yeah, it really sounds like they didn't really explore some of the options that might have been available to them. And certainly that's what we're hearing from different sources about this.
Yeah, people are quite upset, and there is a general feeling, I would say, that SFU didn't consider this a big enough problem to fix, I guess. They didn't look at all of the options that they had in terms of other associations they could have joined, and they didn't really fight for their team enough.
Yeah, this team has really struggled since SFU decided to stop playing in Canadian leagues and join the NCAA, and the leagues they've been playing in are sort of subsectors of the NCAA system. But they haven't had a great track record. They've had a few seasons of no victories at all, and a few others of one or two victories overall. But I know there's a lot of criticism from, I think, players and fans and others about the whole decision to go to the NCAA. You know, one of the things that SFU, well, a lot of the American teams have a lot more access to scholarship funds and that kind of recruitment that, as a Canadian university, SFU doesn't have. And I do wonder if this is going to bring into question the whole project of playing down in the NCAA. You know.
I think you probably know more about this than me. You know, like I said, I don't really follow football that much personally, but that is, again, some of the criticism that I'm seeing online is that, you know, there's plenty of Canadian football teams and Canadian university football teams, I should say, and there are leagues here that the university could join. So why was it so important to go down south in the first place?
And in this situation, why not just regroup and play here in Canada or something like that? At least make the effort to explore the various options.
Yeah. And there's been like quite public outcry about this from, you know, even like the BC Lions put out a statement saying many of its players came out of SFU and have gone on to do great things in the CFL, and it's really disappointed to hear this news.
I know that students have student athletes have organized, you know, on their behalf to fight for things they felt were important in the past, and I think we'll have to see what happens here. But I think the idea that they will go down quietly probably isn't going to happen. I think we're going to hear a whole bunch about this in the coming weeks.
That's right, and we'll definitely be following as those things unfold.
All right, another story making the news: the fallout from prominent judge, law professor, and former BC child advocate Mary Ellen Trippel-Lafond continues. Under pressure, she has voluntarily surrendered her honorary degree from SFU.
That's right. This is, you know, a really, really controversial story that's been kind of making the rounds since October, when a CBC investigation found, you know, discrepancies between what she was claiming as her Cree heritage and, you know, what was available publicly on documents like birth announcements and, you know, immigration records and things like that. So it speaks to this larger issue that we're hearing around Canada of, you know, what we're calling pretendians, people who claim to have Indigenous heritage to gain kind of social power in terms of utilizing some of the really, really horrible historical wrongs and traumas that have been done to Indigenous people and using that to move up in their own fields. And you have to wonder, you know, SFU gave Terpel Lafon the option of making representations on the issues at hand, and she chose instead to return the degree.
And despite returning the degree, not everyone's happy with that outcome either. There are people who would like to have seen that process that you sort of alluded to there carried forward anyway. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, so there are Indigenous groups, particularly the Indigenous Women's Collective, who say that even giving her the option was allowing her to skirt the responsibility of these alleged actions. You know, it shouldn't have been a choice that they gave her. They should have just revoked the degree to kind of hold her accountable. And they say that SFU missed a real opportunity there to kind of take a stand on people who falsify Indigenous heritage.
Yeah, it's an important, and she's either had to surrender or had taken away degrees from a number of other universities.
That's right. She has, I think, she's had, I should say, 10 honorary degrees conferred to her in the past. And I think we're up to, I think, 6 or 7 of those that have either been taken away or she's given back. I know that there's a couple of schools on Vancouver Island. UBC is another big one. She was also employed there as a law professor for a very long time. And she was also, I think she worked at the Center for Residential School Survivors there or something like that. And she's no longer in either of those positions.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to admit, when this story first came up, you know, given the great work she has done, I mean, a lot, you know, particularly as BC child advocate, you know, she was a really strong voice for children. I mean, when it first came up, I thought maybe this is an overreaction, you know, given all the good she's done. But I also think, you know, I mean, on reflection more, I think, you know, I think we all have to appreciate, you know, as a non-Indigenous people, or, and in my case, as a white person, you really can't put yourself into the shoes of the people who are actually affected by this, Indigenous people, and what it means to them. And that's where a lot of their outrage comes from.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you say when the news first came out, the reaction, I think us in the media were quite shocked to hear, you know, this wasn't the first case of this that we'd heard about, but to hear it about Mary Ellen Terpel Lafon, if you read the news, you've heard her name in the past 20 years, right? She was a giant in this kind of field. You know, I've interviewed her and to hear that these kind of allegations were circling around her name genuinely was quite shocking. If they're true, I think it's completely unforgivable, you know, to just the fact that, you know, Indigenous people have suffered these things. They've been, you know, oppressed, downtrodden, however you want to put it. And then when they're in a place where they're able to advocate for themselves, there's people claiming to advocate for them, using those things that have happened to them, and it turns out that they're, you know, not even Indigenous. I think it's
and taking up space and roles that should be for Indigenous people.
Precisely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, on a little more of a fun note, you've been exploring some of the food options here on campus. You know, I'm up here on campus every day, but I usually bring my lunch from home, so I don't actually eat out that often on campus. So I'm really interested to hear what you've discovered about good places to eat.
Well, I went to UBC full disclosure. So yeah. I was, you know, I was a little skeptical about what you guys have up there on the mountain. But yeah, I paid a visit to campus a couple of months ago and I was like, there's some good options up here. I really loved Beercraft. They've got a beautiful mountain patio up there. You know, yeah. You're surrounded by the trees in the summer. It's a very, very nice place to sit and have some appies and a beverage or whatever. And Renaissance Coffee, of course, is, I understand, a campus institution. I've even when I was at university, I, you know, would visit SFU and everyone would be like, well, you have to try Renaissance.
Yeah, when we go for coffee from the radio station, we walk all the way across campus to Renaissance. Partly for the coffee, partly for the opportunity to stretch our legs, but we always go over there.
I hear they have really good samosas as well, right? Mm-hmm. What's your favorite thing to get there?
I usually just get the coffee. But I know they have some of the other folks here will get their lunch there, the butter chicken and the samosas and that kind of thing. I usually get the coffee, but they have some really good options. I mean, one thing that's really nice is not the conventional coffee shop food. So they're, you know, the folks who run that are of Indian background, so they have a bunch of nice, really Indian options, some butter chicken and a whole bunch of other things like that. Mm-hmm. And those are really nice because it's good food and decent prices.
Yeah, I've heard particularly, if you want my recommendation, I've heard that the Rajma Chawal there is really good. That's okay. Kind of like it's an Indian kidney bean, like curry type of thing. So comforting, so hearty. You got to try it for sure.
Excellent. Any other recommendations?
Well, you know, it's rare that we go a week on here without talking about beer. So I would be remiss not to mention Daggerad, which is just down the mountain from SFU. It's I think it's only a 5-minute walk from Production Way. So really, really convenient to get to. They've got incredible beers. They have I think it's a table beer that's named after this beautiful city, the Bernabarian. So can't not recommend that one. They also have a good happy hour. I think they call it a rad hour. And if you go there Monday to Thursday, I forget the exact hours, but you get $1 off your beer, which is great. So yep. You know, you got to look for those deals.
Excellent. Well, there's some nice food options for SFU and nearby. Thanks for joining me today, Srishti.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Srishti Gangdev, reporter with the Burnaby Beacon. How do people find out about these stories and more?
Yeah, you can head to burnabybeacon.com. Just enter your email in the little form that pops up there and you'll get all of this information, you know, from events and news and restaurants and politics and everything you need to know straight to your inbox every morning.
Excellent. Thank you for joining me today.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Talk to you next week.
We'll be back next week with more What's Up in Burnaby. Let's take a quick look at the weather this week. It's a pretty nothing special sort of week. Typical spring weather. A whole bunch of clouds and rain most of the week with temperatures up to around 10 degrees most days and cooler overnight. The one bright spot is Wednesday. That's going to be pretty sunny. And that might be the day you want to plan to get out and enjoy that brief spell of sun because the rain returns on Thursday and is continuing right through to the weekend.
This is Bird Note. It's spring, and the ruby-crowned kinglet's loud, rollicking song echoes from the forest edge in northern and western lowlands. Listen carefully, and you can hear three distinct parts of its song. This tiny powerhouse of a singer is one of the smallest songbirds on the continent, weighing in at just a little more than half a chickadee. Mostly green and hard to spot, flitting from twig to twig, it hovers in midair as it catches tiny insects. The green crown feathers on the male kinglet conceal a swatch of red ones. When in the mood to sing, he raises this narrow crimson crest. The kinglet's Latin name suits it well, Regulus Calendula, the glowing little king. A regal luster that points to his ruby crown, but could also describe his song. The ruby-crowned kinglet tunes up his spring song only in the lowlands. Later this month, He'll depart to sing and nest at mile-high altitudes in our mountain forests. To see a photo of this bird and all we feature on the show, come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
This is the New Pornographers and Fireworks in the Falling Snow from their new album, Continue As Guest.
Let you leave. Oh, you will be damned if you do. And if it's the price we've come to, I'll go as far as this thing goes. Whatever you're selling out, take it all. Whatever you're selling out, take it all.
Fireworks in the Falling Snow from Vancouver's very own new Pornographers. That's from their brand new album, Continue As Guest. And now let's catch up on some of the labor issues here on the SFU campus. Joining me today is Felix Ruiz de la Orden, who is the chief steward of the Teaching Support Staff Union here at SFU. The Teaching Support Staff Union is recently held a strike vote, getting 94% support from its members. Welcome to the show, Felix.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So the TSSU has been... let's first off talk about who do you represent at the TSSU? Because it's a pretty significant part of the university setup here.
Yeah, so our membership consists of... most of the precarious and non-faculty teaching and research staff at Simon Fraser University, our members conduct the majority of research and teaching at the university, but are often in the most precarious kind of positions with their work.
So people who aren't familiar with how universities operate these days might not be aware that the sort of stereotypical professor that everyone thinks of when they think of universities, they only represent a portion of teaching that goes on at universities. Maybe you can explain just a bit more about that.
Yeah, so the way that it's set up is, for example, a lot of lectures are to about 300 students, especially in the kind of, if you're a first year or a second year undergrad, you're going to lecture halls with oftentimes up to 300 students. But to kind of facilitate discussion and more engagement from the students, those big lecture halls, those 300 students are divided into what's called tutorials. And those tutorials is where a lot of the kind of hands-on teaching happens. And those tutorials are run by what are called teaching assistants. So those teaching assistants are our members we represent, or members that are part of the TSSU. And additionally, there's been a move away from kind of faculty members to what's called sessional instructors at the university, too. So sessional instructors run an entire course, much like a professor would, but they are essentially, they have to renew their contract every semester. So they're much more precarious. They don't have as much job security as a faculty member, and they make significantly less money as well.
Yeah, they're basically getting sort of essentially hired on a course-by-course basis.
Yeah, precisely.
And every semester is a new deal.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess the contract that is the union has with the university for its members is coming up, and you've been in negotiation for a while. What are some of the key issues that remain unresolved between the TSSU and SFU?
Yeah, so our collective agreement actually expired last April in 2022, and we've been bargaining for a new contract since November of last year. And when we got to the bargaining table, we came to realize that as the employer, Simon Fraser University, essentially wants to cut up our collective agreement. So they want us to take lots of concessions around kind of priority rights, seniority rights, and rights to promotions. So, for example, sessionals have seniority rights. Sessional instructors have seniority rights. And so if you have seniority, you have some sort of job security. Once you reach kind of a certain threshold of teaching consecutively, you can actually get promoted to a temporary faculty position. SFU wants to just basically take this away, get this out of our collective agreement, and they also want to get rid of priority rights for teaching assistants that guarantees positions for graduate students who need the funding. So those are some of the things that we're actually fighting against, and we don't want SFU to take away. We're also fighting for a cost of living adjustment for our members, including funding packages for graduate students that are a minimum of $32,000 a year after tuition deductions. And that's basically just to make ends meet in the Lower Mainland when inflation is at record high and housing prices are astronomical.
What's the current level of funding for that?
It varies by department to department, but on average it comes around less than $20,000 a year. And there's these really kind of exploitative practices as well throughout the university, where, say, for